You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
This is Ken Vellante with the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast, and have a great episode here with Greg Petrie and Graham Smith, creative talent behind Santos Sisters, a hot comic book. You hopefully can find it at your independent bookseller, but we're going to be getting into that comic and getting into the minds. But first, Greg and Graham, welcome to Something Rather Than Nothing.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Ken.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure, and I know we were talking before we popped on. Something Rather Than Nothing, we get into comics. Sometimes I'm a huge comics fan, and really want to get into your creative work. But I want to ask one of the big questions we ask on this show, a little bit of an intro of an origin question. And we'll start with you, Graham. Were you an artist when you were born?
Yeah, probably. I think so. I mean, no, I guess because I think that there's like the vocation aspect, but then there's also like the intention aspect. And I don't think like, I guess, you know, I probably had the vocation from an early age, even if I didn't know it, but I did without the intention or even, you know, the knowledge of the academy and all that stuff. So I'll say no, but basically, yeah.
No, but basically, yeah. Right. Yep. Yeah. Hey, Greg. So you pop onto the earth and you got this artistic instinct. Are you an artist when you're born?
Ah, geez. I don't know, really. I guess your parents kind of tell you had a proclivity for it. I know I like drawing. Like, I mean, every kid loves drawing when they're little, but I kept liking it and I kept doing it. So I don't know.
That's good enough to keep going, right?
I suppose I had a proclivity for it, but
a proclivity.
Yeah.
Proclivity.
Direction.
Yeah. Since we're talking about proclivities and predilections, let's talk about comic books and creativity. Let's talk about comic books specifically. You put out an independent comic book here, and it's a deep labor of love getting it out there, putting the pieces together. Greg, starting with you, as far as the Santos Sisters comic book,
yeah.
What brings you towards that? What influences you to make to go out there and say, let's get this comic book out into the world? What happens there?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I guess just to see if we could do it. I mean, we've been trying to make comics for a good 10 years now, but
longer than that, Greg.
Yeah. You think? Yeah. No, I guess you're probably right.
I was in my apartment in 2009, 2008, yeah. At least. And that was part of the game plan then. So, but yeah, like more, I guess when it gets down to the nuts and bolts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it's a little.
I guess with when it's over 10 years, I just say 10 years.
Greg, I don't know how to explain what you just said and how it's true, but I think it is. After the 10 years,
everything's 10 years.
10 well, years.
It's also different because, like, now you've succeeded, right? So, like, if you were still trying to successfully produce, publish and get distributed an independent comic book, and it had been 20 years, it would be kind of weird to be like, oh yeah, we've been working on it for like 10 years or something, because like the people in your life would know, like, dude, it's been longer than that. But I agree, since you've succeeded, it's fair to be like, yeah, we were trying for like, I don't know, 10 years or something, but hey, who cares how long it was? We did it.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
But, and like, I guess I will ask this. I should totally know this, and I do. So I'm just asking this question for the sake of the audience. What was the genesis of the two Santos sisters as like the leads in a comic book?
Well, we had that Madame Sosostris figure, which is based off of. We get the character from you somehow.
That's right. I made it up. I created something. Yeah. I stole it from T.S. Eliot, but you know what? By God, I shall still take credit for it.
Right, right. And we kind of take your ideas and just attack.
Well, I have the lead-in that you have into it is that one day while combing the beach, the Santos sisters discovered a pair of beautiful medallions. What happened next changed their lives forever.
Yeah.
And then you quickly go into the hotter the lobster, or lobster, I'm from the East Coast, the sweeter the juice.
Right, 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 right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we just go into it.
I think that part of what works so well for it is that, like, you feel as though you're in this fully formed universe and you're kind of joining it in medias res or whatever, but it doesn't feel exclusive at all. So it's like this uncanny but inclusive, and like obviously there are touch points, things that it feels similar to. I remember when I saw the review comparing the art style to, I didn't even know the guy who like did the Archie books, like I didn't realize that was a style. I saw a comparison to that, I was like, it's kind of like rude, like, and then I went and like looked at some of it. I was like, oh, okay, I guess I can. So there's like that. There's that connection. It's obviously a compliment too, but like it is that mix of like, you know, kind of what you're looking at. You kind of feel like you have its number, and then like, and you're comfortable enough proceeding, but you realize it's not quite what it seems. Right? Is that inaccurate?
Well, that sounds about right. Sure. Yeah. You jump right in, you get the idea that there's like a backstory and stuff. There may or may not be, but you don't really need that to tell a story. You can just kind of go into it.
So tell us about, I want to talk about like the comic getting into the world, right? So like I ran into a Floating World Comics, you know, what we're talking about, like, I don't know, maybe like cities and places that have, you know, your independent comic book stores, comic book culture, which would certainly be the case in places like Chicago and out here in Portland, Oregon, and, you know, other metropolitan areas. So, you know, you look at the place, this 56-page issue, and get it around the country. But could you take us a little bit more into, the second printing of this issue and getting it distributed and just trying to, you know, crack at it as an independent maker? This is an independent podcast. You do an independent book. Like, what's going on to get your thing, to get your art, the thing that you created, to get it in my hands? I'm in Albany, Oregon. I got it in my hands from Portland. How do you get that done?
Mark would be a good one to answer that one. He's not here, unfortunately. Mark did a lot of the legwork getting them into your hands. I'd say I think he already knew the fellow over at Floating World Comics. We did this other comic book, Beef Jam, so he's been shopping that around. He's kind of developed a whole list of contacts and. Yeah, I don't know. A few people with a sphere of influence have gotten their hands on it, and it's pretty much been word of mouth. It's a good product. We did a lot of work getting it printed and stuff, making it look nice. I think that's half the battle.
But, yeah, what about What about comic books or funny books themselves, right? Because this feels like in the good old that offhand reference, you know, funny books or old comic books. There's always been this like tussle, like in weird history with comics about, you know, around art or like their validity or popular culture. And I think over time, what you've seen is like, you know, like looking at the incredible work that you do as creators, penciling, the colorist, the ideas that go into comics that make them like, that make them pop. So I wanted to ask the art question, however you want to answer it. But, the question is, comic books as art, and what is art? Graham, you want to start?
Sure. Well, Greg, why don't you, because my answer is going to be long and pretentious as hell, and it's going to be good.
Yeah.
So, Greg, sure. I'm curious to hear what you say first.
Well, yeah, as far as comics, they can, well, let's see. I think comics is more heavy on the craft side, as opposed if you compare it to something like oil painting. But even oil painting is I think craft gets left out of the equation a lot of the times, because there is art, and that covers poetry and film and everything too. But you know, those things all take craft. Too, and I mean like a set of rules that have been established over time, like what works and what doesn't work, and you know, and a good artist can play with those rules, go outside the rules, but stay within the rules. There's the thing, like sometimes you have artists that are very artistic. Artsy, I don't have the vocabulary for it, but then you have ones that are that have a good craft work, you know, and sometimes you'll have someone that's really heavy on the art side, but the craft isn't that good. Like I don't know, like I don't know if I'd be insulting Jackson Pollock for instance. There's not much craft work, but the way that he moves the stuff around is really artistic, and you can feel it and all that. But and then you can have someone that's really good at the craft aspect, like what's his name, Hopper, you know, like his paintings aren't very artistic, but they're, I guess, no, those kind of are, because they got like a real mood about them. But you know what I'm saying? There's like,
yeah,
like it can be like very technically, you got to have the technical and the ethereal. Is that the right word?
So I'm going to build off your answer a little bit, because I hadn't really thought of it this way, but this kind of makes sense in my grand unified theory. And so I'm, you know, not, I am kind of a perennial comics outsider, I guess. I grew up reading comic books. I still love them, but like I'm not, it's not one of the things that I've chosen to put a bunch of my time into, like reading and paying attention to it, right? But why I think comics, and I kind of connect it with pop music, but I'll make a distinction for why I think it's better. Like, you know, art is, leaving the word art aside, right? Like a creative expression that is designed for appreciation and interpretation by a community, right? So let's say that that's how I define art. And like comic books, to Greg's point about how like you have these rules, right? Like I've never seen like a completely abstract comic book that also tries to tell a narrative, right? Like that wouldn't really fly. And like in the art world, like knowing, like Jackson Pollock did, when a novel idea is not only novel, but also will connect with a, you know, with the existing community and with a larger segment of that community. Like that is what I think of as the artistic side of it. And honestly, like in fine art, like particularly, I haven't been to galleries in a couple years now, but like I used to go to galleries a lot, and there was like a trend of like what I think of as just like bad figurative painting. And it was obvious that, like, you know, successful professional painters were like, the new movement was like, let's just make paintings that like look like bad paintings, like bad college paintings, right? But knowing when that shift is possible to make and making it, that's like the artistic side. Craft in the fine arts, I don't know, like, you know, Jeff Koons gets maligned. I'm not crazy about Koons. I grew up loving Jeff Koons in the 90s for some reason. I remember being like, why can't I find a book with a bunch of pictures of Jeff Koons' artwork? And like, I got my wish, right? But like, his craft is amazing, but he doesn't do any of it. Because he realized early on, like, I need to hire people whose entire job is to like build molds to like create gigantic metal things that look like Mylar balloons, right? Like, he's not, and a lot of people think the fact that he doesn't do the craft like matters somehow. That doesn't matter. Right. Go and look at his stupid sculptures. Either you like them with, you know, not knowing any of the facts or like his smug, stupid face. Either you like it or you don't. The problem with fine art is that like it both doesn't allow that cult of personality aspect, and it also like kind of absolutely is dependent on that, right? Like Gerhard Richter, like, I'm sorry, his piece, like his work is just not, none of it is that good as far as I'm concerned. It's all fine, it's all art, whatever. But like, there's no reason, the fact that like he has this like persona that like, no, but like people who know who Gerhard Richter is, they don't actually know anything about him. He's not a celebrity like Drake or something, right? But like, that's responsible for making, you know, transmuting his paintings into gold, right? So to bring it back to comic books, there are these sets of rules and you work within them, but also like, you're not really bound by them, because a lot of what you're trying to do is kind of show off your technical skills for a community of people who are, you know, predisposed. What did you call it? I forget the pre-word. The proclived.
Predilection and proclivities.
Yeah. So, you know, you're showing off your skills to a community of people who is not, you know, they want you to show off your skills too. They want to have fun. They want to like get out of their own head, right? They want to get into a different world.
Yeah.
The way that the two sides feed off each other is actually pretty healthy. And you think about like, you know, nobody's suing people for dressing up. I mean, I'm sure Disney will sooner or later, but people aren't suing people for dressing up like their characters at Comic Cons, right? And like, if you tried to, I don't know, if you like tried to sell a fake Gerhard Richter painting or something at an art fair, like that's not going to go well. So I think that like it, people tend to think that the best art is not populist, right? Or for lack of a better word, it, to me, it always is. Pop music, like, people have, I'm a musician primarily, right? A pop musician. People have more intense, passionate connections with their favorite pop songs than they do with like any book they've ever read, much less any painting or like any immersive art installation, right? And like, comic books are an even better form of that, because it is ultimately collaborative between the creators and the audience. And it's kind of a symbiosis or a dialogue. I don't know. I can see I've just like completely maxed out the bars here down at the bottom, but I'm happy with that answer.
Hey. Graham, you were making an abstract piece of art with the sound waves down there.
Exactly.
So it was just a manifestation of what the theory was that you were talking about there. So it was all appreciated. It's really cool to talk about these things. And you know, I have these conversations about music. Like, I talked to my son about like, you know, my kids are really into music. I'm like really into music. And I think you're right. I think sometimes when we get into the art conversation, like we're not supposed to talk about pop music, or when we're around our serious like music friends, like we're not supposed to say certain names, and we all get like influenced by that. And I think, you know, I always thought comics were like kind of like this, always like this outsider strain, right? Like, you know, you could always do it. And somebody's like the comic book guy on like The Simpsons, or like there's a weird little thing about people who are into comics. But it's like, it's the comfort in enjoying that type of stuff. And I think that's where the fun is in the Santos Sisters, and in pop music, and in just like drop you into a scene. There's funny ass dialogue, weird shit's going on. These superpowers don't have like a super strong basis in the cosmology, but all of it's happening. So
for sure. Funny.
It feels good. It feels good. And most of this is just to say, as I explain this, the way is that I'm a huge Swiftie and Taylor Swift fan, and I'm always trying to rationalize and embed my adoration of Taylor in a philosophical basis to take on all comers.
Well, can I put a question to you that I couldn't talk about on Twitter? I mean, I guess, I don't know. As a Swiftie, I want to know, what is your position on the Damon Albarn stuff?
This is going to be like the lamest thing I could possibly answer, but I just encountered it just very recently, and I haven't even like delved into, like, I thought the art questions around there of you know, like co-authorship and authorship and like making assumptions about creativity, I was like, whoa, like what's being said here. So like when I read that, I was like, man, like so what I'm referring to, of course, is like questions and accusations of like authorship, yeah, and how things are created. Let me ask you, Graham, like, is that like the frame of it? In
To me, that's, so I kind of eventually came around to realize like it is shitty for him to say that, because
what did he say?
So he basically said, he was misquoted by The Guardian or somebody as saying, yeah, Taylor Swift doesn't write her songs. I was, you know, upset to learn that. And that's not the quote that he actually said. But I think that the whole story is like, she does write songs. She is absolutely a songwriter. She also is a business, and I believe solicits outside like some sort of like demos that then maybe she rewrites or whatever. So like for me, as a person who like takes my songwriting really seriously, like I at first was like, wait, he's telling the truth. She does work with a team. But ultimately, it's a very misogynist thing to put out there. And like, there's no reason that he should have been more careful to not say what he said. They shouldn't have misquoted him. And her calling him out was all right. But it is weird, right? Like authors, like everybody should know that like there aren't any like Bob Dylan, Cat Stevens, like people who like have 100% final control over the way their songs sound. Like, I don't believe that that exists anywhere anymore. So like when I first read it, I was like, oh, cool, Damon Albarn wants to talk about that aspect. So like that was kind of my take on it, because like it's a machine, right? You know, like this is, it's big business. It's not for nothing that she's methodically re-recording all of her old albums instead of writing new songs, right? There's big money in this stuff.
Absolutely. Hey, Greg, you hanging in there with the Swiftie banter? We got this as a timely podcast, you know, making sure we engage all issues, big and small. And we're just checking on you over there, Greg. You hanging in okay?
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Greg, what do you think? Greg, do you think that eventually Taylor Swift could sing a song that I wrote? Do you think, because I've often thought about that, like maybe I should just sell songs to Taylor Swift since my songs are so like difficult for people to deal with. I don't think I could do it, but I, you know, what do you think?
We're one step closer to having a Taylor on this podcast.
There we go.
Yeah.
It's always been the eventual goal of the podcast, which I've said, you know, a couple times out loud. So, yes, we could see it. But from Taylor Swift to the Santos Sisters in two comics, Greg, in putting together the art and putting together what this world looks like in the comics. It's fun and it's comfortable. I know there's like the Archies reference and I saw that in the Quimby's quote and in that feel.
Yeah.
In creating this, in putting this together, where are you trying to evoke something specific? Where's this world come from? Or is it just haphazard and happenstance?
Oh, well, I'd say if we start with the Archie similarities, what we're trying to do is just get the process down as efficient and clean as we can, and that style of comic, Archie, a lot of the old more cartoony books, Richie Rich, or some of the Disney Golden Key books and stuff like that. It's all structured very, very, very soundly. If you can get a working structure in place, you know what you're doing every step along the way, you know? So the characters, they're all kind of by the book. You draw the little circles and make the stick figures.
Yeah.
Well, you also have like the universe there, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what I kind of contributed to in some small way, is like imagining what are all of the nooks and crannies of the world like.
Right,
as long as you kind of know that stuff's there, then you can fill in stuff at a moment.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. You kind of build up the universe. You make characters, and you kind of build a pool of characters to draw from. So in the early stages, it's all character design and stuff like that, hammering out costumes, how the person's face looks, you know, because you want to be able to draw the same person from panel to panel. So you have to work out the structure of their face and how their clothes look and stuff like that.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to ask you both an art question, but it's just like, what's art supposed to do? I mean, the question I ask is what's the role of art? So like, I've asked this at different times and amongst different artists, and it's like, what's art supposed to be doing right now? And is it any different during our like pandemic times? Is it more important? So what's the role of art?
You want to go, Greg?
Nah, I got nothing.
I have a couple thoughts. I'll try to be able, you know, keep it under control a little bit. I think that there's both. So in the pandemic times, it's interesting. There's not as much art coming out, and I don't know if that's because artists, like, there's still art coming out, but a lot of it is commercialized, right? So like, commercial art is supposed to make money. There is non-commercial art, I think. And what non-commercial art is supposed to do, and honestly, what commercial art is supposed to do too, hopefully, is make you think, make you learn more, and make you a better person. Like, to me, it's like, and feel stuff, I guess, but I don't know, I'm, you know, autistic or whatever, so it's like feeling and thinking, like, I'll feel stuff, but it's not really real until I turn it into thoughts. So you can add feel in there too. But I think that, you know, the connection aspect, as a musician, it's interesting because it's very much a push model, right? Like, you just kind of put songs out there and then you get adulation, but it's not an iterative process. I've written a ton of songs and like, I wish I had more listeners, but like, you don't really get that much feedback. I feel like comics is better at that, to the point earlier of art being, you know, so like the artist art, for me, making art exists to make me feel better. I'm going to do it no matter what. But for people, you know, then there's the other level of like, what are people going to get out of the art that you create? So feel something, think, learn, become better people. Comic books are probably more effective at that than music, or much less like fine art, you know, academic painting. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, and thank you for your mentions of music. I'm actually, my son and I are going to do a small project that I've never done before. I grabbed a Zoom mic to be able to record. He's a musician. He could play, you know, guitar, electric guitar, and bass and drums. And I learned so much about music from him. But we're going to try to record a little something just like ad hoc. Never done that before. So a little art project that I'm taking time to do over the next couple of days. So I actually just really dig talking about music. You know, we're talking about all art here, and it's really, really exciting to me. Hey, Greg, just, you know, I mean, what's art supposed to do? It's supposed to make us laugh, supposed to make us escape, or what's the role of art?
Well, I suppose it has lots of different roles. Those things you mentioned, escaping and making you laugh, and inspiring, just telling a story, specifically with comics, I think that's exactly where it is. It's just telling a story, and in the comics case, the art sort of takes a back seat to the story. There are comic books that the art will be the main focus. I know for me, I've never really read a lot of comics. I've got a handful that I really like, but for the most part, it's just flipping through the art for me. But it's important to tell a story, though.
Yeah, I found, as I've talked to a lot of artists of different sorts, or even like doing the philosophy podcast, is, you know, it drops back down to stories. You know, we use that term a lot, and I think it's true. Like the narrative, a way of telling something or telling about the experience. And
you shouldn't notice the art that much. You know, you should just be immersed in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I won't go off on a rant here, but I think immersion can be overrated. Like, I think part of what is so beneficial about, I'm thinking about video games, but also like experiencing art, is placing it within the context of the other stuff that you know and think about. So like, on some level, yeah, if you're just trying to escape, then immersion is great. Yeah. But you hopefully don't want to escape all the time. So I don't know.
Now that I think about it, I do. It's not just the immersion. You want something. At least for me, I like the pictures. I like fun pictures to look at. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that about not, like, I read comic books back when I would buy and consume comic books, but, like, I never really read them because the stories were, I mean, the comics I was reading, the stories weren't great, I guess, and the art was really good, and that's what I looked for. I don't know, I've been thinking about Lobo a lot recently. I feel like I need to go back and read Lobo because I had, like, the most intense personal connection to that comic book, and I have a feeling I would still think it's really funny. I was, like, in seventh grade. It's not like I was, like, 4 years old or something, loving Lobo.
Right, right.
Yeah. All right. Flashbacks to Lobo.
Sure, yeah.
Devil, I remember that. Devil May Care. I'm going to go about it my own way. Lobo, period.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
I've been, for context, listeners, I'm going through the complex process of just like not giving a shit about Marvel at all, and I guess embracing the fact that maybe I kind of like DC. So that's like, I won't bore you with the further details, but that's the context there. I do love Lobo. That's where it started. So,
yeah, it's, I'm a rare one where, as far as the major publishers, I grew up Marvel, but I've been like almost, I buy DC for the past decade or so, and a lot of indies. But most people I talk to with comics would be like, I grew up this way, and that's my universe.
Yeah,
right. It's kind of like the Nintendo versus Sega Genesis argument. You know, you were Nintendo, or you were Sega Genesis.
Yeah, Nintendo.
But then you, right. Yeah, right. Well, but then you go to Tokyo in the summer of 1999 and get to bring home a Dreamcast before it's for sale in the U.S., and all of a sudden your Nintendo allegiance is a little shaky.
Oh, very shaky. Very, very shaky. Rocked to its foundation after that type of after that type of event. That's right. We're gonna reach for the stars with this question. I might have another absurd question or two, but reaching for the stars, the something rather than nothing question. I've asked it two ways, and you can answer it either way. Why is there something rather than nothing, or how is there something rather than nothing? I don't know who's going first. You're both chomping at the bit. Not people can't see the video, but they're both like two racehorses right up at the
gate. Answer first. No, Greg, no. You go first.
I really can't answer that. I can't begin to know, and I'm fine with it.
So Greg,
Greg is humble. He was ready. I thought he was right out of the gates. He was just wanting to get his
maybe on another day.
Craig's just grateful there is something, right? And that's a good way to be. I started reading this philosophy book that I read about. I guess I was reading Nietzsche's Wikipedia page, and I came across this book by a person named African Spear. And obviously, I thought that was a cool name to have, first of all. But I read, like, a lot of people were very into this book called Thoughts and Reality. I only got through like the first 40 pages. I'm looking forward to reading the rest of it, but it's like you can't get it on Kindle. So it's like you have to scroll through a Google Doc, whatever. I believe that like what I took from the first part of that is like we're always trying to recreate something, right? So I guess it's like the chicken and the egg question. Like how could that work? Like you have to, but like I the way that I read it, I'm obviously biased, look, you know, trying to fit my own agenda, is like we're trying to capture something that like sticks with us and means something to us. And so we're kind of trying to recreate that somehow because we think it's valuable to other people. And I guess that connects to my other answer that you're trying to give people more information and feeling so that they can, you know, do what they need to do to become better. So that's why there's something, because we can all be better.
Right.
Hey, Graham Smith, I don't know. I'm hearing you're working on your thesis here. This is a testing ground.
Yeah, just trying out new material on your podcast. Sorry.
As we get into these profound things, now, and the basis for the conversation was my love of the Santos Sisters comet. So as we reach for the stars, we also know that there are chapters in the Santos Sisters, such as out of gas, kiss my dolphin ass, right? and such vignettes of how do I set up a tent? So you know, we're gonna get to cover it all. The Santos Sisters, American Nature. Independent Comics, Greg and Fake. We're all talking to Graham Smith as part of the creative team. Greg Petrie putting together this fine comic. What I wanted to ask you both is this is kind of like just the open-ended thing to make sure our listeners can connect with, you know, this cool art that I like that you've done. And whether Graham, it's like, you know, music, whether it's the comics and stuff, could you let us know kind of like how folks can come in contact with what you create, where to get a copy to Santos Sisters, maybe places to look, however you want to like lead the listeners to what you create, both of you.
Greg, spit out some URLs. I know gregandfake.blogspot.com is a good source.
That's a good one. Yeah, you can find the comic through there. Bunch of shops all over. It'll be in stores. It's in some stores right now, but like I don't know if I said it earlier, but we have a we have distributors now, so your local shop may have ordered some if you didn't ask them to already. But you can definitely look up Greg and Fake, and you know, just.
And I saw Portland, Oregon to Portland, Maine, in the Chicago area as well. Quimby's bookstore, where actually, folks, the first issue of Something Rather Than Nothing zine will eventually arrive on the shelves of Quimby's that I happened upon for the first time in my life when I visited Chicago a few months ago, when bookstores change your life. Love that event, running into Quimby's. Graham, some added things as far as information, where to find your art, find the Santos sisters, music, etc.
Definitely. I'll hit you with some URLs. They're all short for ease of typing and memory, but some of the words are misspelled, so bear with me. I just found that there's a santosisters.com, which has like a nice little write-up on it, and it's got Instagram and Twitter links, so santosisters.com is a good place to hit.
Oh, there you go. Thank you, Graham.
For me, kgw.me.me, it's the Montenegro TLD. kgw.me is my main band, Kleenex Girl Wonder. 28 years young, the band is. I wish I were. I guess if I was, then I would have been an artist when I was born. heav.in, heaven, but with an I. heav.in. That is Gates of Heaven, another band. I guess Re3P, REE3P.bandcamp.com. That has a bunch of other stuff. Then there's art at ughfine.art, ughfine.art. And that's, I mean, then Twitter, Graham Smith on Twitter, you know, my life is art, you know, put me in a gallery.
Yeah, man, that's great. No, thanks for all that too. And folks, we'll have that in the, all the links in the show notes. And I think, what I'd like to say too is, you know, thanks for the creative team here and the popping on to the podcast and bouncing around and talking philosophy and comics and Taylor Swift and music and creativity. I really appreciate what you're doing, and everybody, you know, for the comics just asking listeners to support, you know, the independent, an independent podcast, independent comics and creators and musicians. Just, you know, if you could spend that extra, you know, minute or two and check out a lot of the great things that you're doing. Greg and Graham, I just really want to thank you both for spending the time, for creating the art that you do, and for popping onto Zany philosophy program, Something Rather Than Nothing. Just really wanted to thank both of you.
Yeah, this was great. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, much appreciated. And keep creating, and have a great day, both of you.
Yeah, you too.
You too. Thanks.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.